ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
This is from Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, Dhyana Yoga, text number 40. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Partha Naivehana Namutra Vinashastasya Vidyate Nahi Kalyana Kritkaschid Durgatim Tata Kaschiti. The Supreme Personality of God had said, Sanaprita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities, does not meet with destruction, either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. A purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is text number 640, 1517, Sri Narada Muni instructs Vyasadeva as follows. Tyaktva sudharmam charanam bhujam hare bhajana pakvota patitato yati yatra kho babadram bhudam ushikim kuvarta ato vachatam sudharmata. If someone gives up all material prospects and takes complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no loss or degradation in any way. On the other hand, a non-devotee may fully engage in his occupational duties and yet not gain anything. For material prospects, there are many activities, both scriptural and customary. A transcendentalist is supposed to give up all material activities for the sake of spiritual advancement in life, Krishna consciousness. One may argue that by Krishna consciousness, one may attain the highest perfection if it is completed. But if one does not attain such a perfectional stage, then he loses both materially and spiritually. It is enjoined in the scriptures that one has to suffer the reaction for not executing prescribed duties. Therefore, one who fails to discharge transcendental activities properly becomes subjected to those reactions, to these reactions. The Bhagavatam assures the unsuccessful transcendentalist that there need be no worries. Even though he may be subjected to the reaction for not perfectly executing prescribed duties, he is not a loser, because auspicious Krishna consciousness is never forgotten, and one so engaged will continue to be so, even if he is low-born in the next life. On the other hand, one who simply follows strictly the prescribed duties need not necessarily attain auspicious results if he is lacking Krishna consciousness. The purport may be understood as follows. Humanity may be divided into two sections, namely the regulated and the non-regulated. Those who are engaged simply in bestial sense gratification without knowledge of their next life or spiritual salvation belong to the non-regulated section. And those who follow the principles of prescribed duties in the scriptures are classified amongst the regulated section. The non-regulated section, both civilized and non-civilized, educated and non-educated, strong and weak, are full of animal propensities. Their activities are never auspicious, because while enjoying the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, they perpetually remain in material existence, which is always miserable. On the other hand, those who are regulated by scriptural injunctions, and who thus rise gradually to Krishna consciousness, certainly progress in life. Everyone okay so far?
Yes.
One person, two.
Yeah.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Those who are following the path of auspiciousness can be divided into three sections, namely one, the followers of scriptural rules and regulations who are enjoying material prosperity. Two, those who are trying to find ultimate liberation from material existence. And three, those who are devotees in Krishna consciousness. Those who are following the rules and regulations of the scriptures for material happiness may be further divided into two classes. Those who are fruit of workers and those who desire no fruit for sense gratification. Those who are after fruit of results for sense gratification may be elevated to a higher standard of life, even to the higher planets. But still, because they are not free from material existence, they are not following the truly auspicious path. The only auspicious activities are those which lead one to liberation. Any activity which is not aimed at ultimate self-realization or liberation from the material bodily concept of life is not at all auspicious. Activity in Krishna consciousness is the only auspicious activity. And anyone who voluntarily accepts all bodily discomforts for the sake of making progress on the path of Krishna consciousness can be called a perfect transcendentalist under severe austerities. And because the Eightfold Yoga system is directed toward the ultimate realization of Krishna consciousness, such practice is also auspicious, and no one who is trying his best in this matter need fear degradation. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Parta Naivehanamutra Bina Shasta Sividyate Nahi Kalyana Kritkashchit Durgatim Tata Gachchiti. So, Naiva, never is it so, Iha, in this material world. Na, Amutra, nor is it, he's saying, is it in the next life. So, Iha and Na, Amutra, not in this life or in the next life. Vinasha means destruction. Vidite exists. Na hi, never certainly. Kalyana krit, one who is engaged in auspicious activities. So the word krit, krit, which is the root for the word karma, which means to act. And kalyana krit means those who are doing work that's auspicious. Kaschid, anyone, durgatim to degradation, tata, is a very affectionate term that Krishna uses for Arjuna. Tata means my dear one. Tata, a gacchati, goes. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction, either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. And in the purport, Prabhupada first quotes from Narada Muni's instructions to Srila Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva had compiled the Vedic literatures, the Puranas, Itihasas, and he did this specifically because he knew in the Kali Yuga that people would be ineligible for understanding the Vedic scriptures. It requires a particular lifestyle to understand the Vedas. And in Kali Yuga, that's not available. And therefore, giving the people an opportunity to come in contact with spiritual knowledge through stories and explanations, he wrote the Mahabharata, which includes the Bhagavad Gita. But still he didn't feel satisfied, and therefore his spiritual master appeared before him, and Srila Vyasadeva inquired from his guru, Narada Muni, why is it? You please tell me why I'm not satisfied. I'm doing my service to the best of my ability, but I still feel some lacking. And Narada Muni told Srila Vyasadeva that the reason is you haven't described in detail the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the course of explaining this fact to him, what fact? The fact that if one doesn't establish a relationship with Krishna, especially through hearing about him and his personal activities in the spiritual world, then whatever imagined form of liberation one may attain, one will fall down from. There's no safe position in this world except for that of reestablishing our relationship with Krishna. And he explained to him also that you might as well go for it, because there's a sense in the Vedas from the very beginning, especially we find in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. This is true because they're telling people how to live a harmonious life in the material world. Or, and that could include elevationism, moving to a higher position in the material universe through performing great sacrifices. We find that this is the system in the material world. When the demons took over heaven, you know from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 8th canto, before the appearance of Lord Vamanadeva, the demons, having gained strength because of their worship of their spiritual master, Shukracharya, became very powerful, and the demigods became weak, actually, because of their disrespect to their spiritual master, Brihaspati. And this is the way of the material world. There's always some upsurge of the modes of nature. Even if you're in heaven, you can't stay there very long. Now, when the demons came to the heavenly planets, they were empowered to take over, and they kicked out the demigods, who fled from that place and took shelter of the Lord. That's a long story. But the point I want to come to in the beginning of that story is, as soon as they got the demons to heaven, they were instructed by their spiritual master to perform at least 100 Ashvamedha yajñas. It's a very expensive yajña which creates material power. It's like frequent flyer miles that you get on the airlines, and but much more powerful. And the reason they did that is because you can't stay in heaven unless you keep the frequent flyer miles going. You'll fall down from that position. Now, Krishna mentions that in the second chapter of the Gita, Shinye Punyang Martyalokam Vishanti Evam. He says that people rise to the heavenly planets, but they fall back down again because they use up their pious credits. And it's a hard fall. And some people ascribe to the idea that the purpose of life is to perform Vedic sacrifices perfectly, and therefore to always stay in a harmonious position in the material world, somehow or other. The Karmakandis believe this. However, we know in the Krishna book, and the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Maharaj Mriga is given as an example of a Karmakandi. He performed unlimited Karmakanda activities. He got all these pious credits, but he made a mistake in the process. And he was held accountable for it, because in the Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, when you make a mistake, you own it. In bhakti, you don't own it. In fact, it's mentioned, so paramulam bhajata priyasya tanya bhava sa hare priyeshaha vikarma yachchok patitam katanchid dhunoti sarvam hridi sannivishtaha. That if somehow or other in bhakti, if you make a mistake, all you have to do is keep doing bhakti and you'll make up for it. Because Krishna is already in your heart, he knows your intention. And it's the path where you're taking shelter of Krishna, it's the path of grace. You're not depending on your own power, but you're depending on Krishna's mercy. Mriga made a mistake. He gave in charity trillions of cows, all decorated with golden ornaments. And he accidentally got one of the cows back because it wandered back in the herd, and he re-gifted it. You can tell from this how bad re-gifting is. Don't do it. So somehow or other the Brahmins got in a argument about this, and they ended up cursing him. And he got blamed, because you're held to the letter of the law in Karmakanda if you make a mistake. The result was, in his next life, he had to take birth as a lizard. Albeit, he took birth in a well that was near where Krishna lived, and Krishna's children found him there, and Krishna came and pulled him out with his left hand and brought him back to his original form. Nonetheless, the story is there to show us that Karmakanda is risky. Anything done in the material world is risky. And that's why Narada Muni mentions this verse. He said, don't invest anything here in the material world. That's his mode. We know that when Daksha had given birth to 10,000 sons, and specifically he was trying to populate the universe with people who would make offspring, getting things going. And they had all gone off to perform severe austerities and practice controlling their senses. And Narada came along and he said, "So what are you doing?" And they said, "We're following in our father's footsteps and we're performing austerities." And Narada Muni said, "So what's the aim of it?" And he said, "We're going to become perfect grihasthas." He said, "Oh, don't waste your time." He said, "You've already performed austerities, purified your senses. You might as well just take sannyas." And he told them stories, very abstract stories, but they were so intelligent that they could understand exactly what they meant. He gave allegories. The long and short of it is they got up and left and took sannyas and renounced the world. When Narada Muni found out, Daksha, he was a little disturbed, but he had 1,000 more sons who did the same thing, and Narada did the same thing. He convinced him. Then Daksha became really angry, and he cursed Narada Muni. And this, in the cursing, it came up that Daksha felt that you actually have to experience the material world before you can renounce it. This was his argument. But Narada Muni doesn't hold that idea. Neither did Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Prabhupada points that out. He said, "My guru never thought that." And he also, Srila Prabhupada points out that sometimes a woman, when having a child, will say, "I'll never do this again," because it's so painful, but then another child comes and said, "This is the way of the material world." We forget, and we engage again and again in sense gratification. So Narada Muni said, "Enough already, give up the material world." So this verse, Tyaktva sadharmam sharanam bhujam harer bhajana pakvo tat patetato yadi yatra kva babajam abhuram ushikim kavarta apto bhujatam sadharmata. He says, so what if you follow your duty properly in this world, if you don't get Krishna consciousness? Because you really didn't get anything. I was there with my mother when she left the world for 5 days. I stayed by her bedside. And one of the things she said to me before she left, she said, "I never want to have to do this again." And the other thing I noticed when she left her body was she left all her stuff behind. Anything she had gained academically, through financial planning, and books, houses, and art, and all kinds of things. And I just noticed as she left, I thought, oh, all her stuff's still here. And she'll never see it again. It's gone. In fact, the Vedas say, Asango Khyayam Purusha, little Jiva, you have nothing to do with all this stuff. There's nothing in this world that's yours. So the illusory idea that I've attained something by following my dharma perfectly in this world is what Narada Muni is saying is folly. However, he said, if you go for devotional service and you don't make it, Tyakva Sudharmam, you give up your duty, Tyakva Sudharmam, Charanam Bhujam Harer, and you take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Bhajan Apakvo, but if you're Apakvo, means you're not ripe. You weren't ready for it quite, it turns out. Apakvo ta patet tato, patet means to fall, patet tato yadi, yatra kwa, he asked the question, kwa, yatra kwa bhava abhuta musha kim. What did the person lose? You didn't lose anything. If you jump for the bar and you express your intention, I'm going for this, but you don't make it, it's okay. Because Krishna takes forward progress, just like they do in football. You go forward progress, you get knocked back, you miss it, so you still, it counts. On the other hand, he said, if you perform your duties perfectly in this world, did everything right, you got all your A's, all the way through high school, and then college, you crushed it. You went on, you got your PhD, you got the perfect job, everything, but you didn't get Krishna consciousness. And he said, you didn't get anything. You missed the whole thing, and you'll leave it behind. So what is the point? So this verse is a verse where Krishna is telling Arjuna, don't worry, go for devotional service because you're not going to lose anything. Anybody who tries for this is never overcome by evil, he says. Durgatim tatagachyati. You never go down if you try for devotional service. Or as they say in Wall Street, you never go broke taking a profit. So one should try for devotional service. And one may also abandon one's so-called material duty. Of course, to modify that to some degree, the Shastra says, 11th canto, yata kamana kurvit manna nirvidyati yavata matkata shravanado va. What is the verse? Do you have it? I'm sorry, what is the verse? I'm sorry, no, it's Bhagavatam, 11th canto. Yata kamana kurvita nan nirvidyata yavata matkata shravanado va. Anyway, the verse says, if you'll find it for me, please, 11th canto. It says that tavat, here it is. It's in there somewhere. Tavat karmana kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanadova shravat yavan najayate. So this verse means that until one has developed a taste for chanting, hearing and chanting, then one should... at least externally, follow the rules and regulations of the Varnashrama. And don't try to artificially give it up. A slight counterbalance to the verses we're mentioning. Nonetheless, one should understand the principle. The Bhagavatam also says, Karabhajana Muni, Devarshi Bhutapnam Nirnam Pitar Nam Nakinkaro Nayanam Nirnicharajan Sarvatmana Yasharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Priyahritakartam. If you're engaged fully in the process of surrender to Mukunda, then you have no more debts to anyone else. That's why Krishna says in the Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamikam Sharanam Raja. When you find yourself so far in debt, as they say, if you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. That's the material world, it's a big hole. And so Krishna says, surrender to me, I'll deliver you from all sinful reaction. And the verse I just quoted, Devarshi Bhutatna Mirinam Pitaranam. It's a list of all the people we owe. As soon as you're born, you owe people. Who do you owe? Devas, the rishis, ordinary living entities, Devarshi Bhutatna, Mirinam, forefathers, Pitranam, your forefathers, Pitranam, and ordinary human beings. There's all kinds of people that facilitate us surviving in the material world. So you owe them all. And there's a bill. What is that bill called? Starts with a K. Karma. Yeah, it's a world of karma. It's a world of debt we're born into. And that goes on perpetually. And actually, there's so much. The Shastra says, you'll find this in the commentaries of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about why we're suffering in the first place in the material world, because we have so much karmic debt because of sinful activity. And there's so much that you can't experience it all in this lifetime. It goes in special storage lockers and you'll never come to the end of it. However, if you surrender to Krishna, if you surrender to Mukunda, then Devarshi Bhutatna Rinam Pitranam Akinkaro Nayam Rani. Rani means a debtor. Narajan. He's saying, is Shukadev to King Parikshit, you won't be a debtor anymore. Why? Because you're surrendering to Mukunda. And if you surrender to Mukunda, then you're no longer held accountable for all these other debts that you owe naturally to all these other entities. No more Rani. So, one, Narada Muni says, should take this opportunity to give one's life to Mukunda, to Krishna. Then there's no loss. Then, Prabhupada continues in the second paragraph about how humanity is divided into two categories. And that's the regulated and the non-regulated. And so there's those who follow the scriptures and those who don't follow the scriptures. And then he says of those who follow this path of auspiciousness, that is a regulated life, there's three categories. One is the followers of scriptural rules and regulations who are enjoying material prosperity. Two, those who are trying to find ultimate liberation from material existence. And those who are devotees of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. And then he divides it further. Those who are following the rules and regulations of the scriptures for material happiness, those who are fruit of workers, and those who desire no fruit for sense gratification. And then, just to summarize that, because it sounds rather convoluted, I'm not sure if you're following all these different divisions right now, but the point Prabhupada's coming to then is that activity in Krishna consciousness is the only auspicious activity. So there are various paths given in the Vedas, and this comes back to Srila Vyasadeva. He gave all kinds of ways in which one may gradually purify oneself by following the Vedic process. Even the karmis, because they're following the karmakanda, are considered to be dear to Krishna. This comes up in the Nectar of Instruction in the second to last verse, which says, Karmi bhya parito hare pritya vyaktin yayur jnaninas. He says, he lists the jnanis as some of the people who are progressive because they're following the Vedic scriptures and they're regulated. However, amidst those who are regulated, there are people with different kinds of motives. Some of them are trying to do that to enjoy the material world. Some of them are trying to renounce the world altogether. And others are Krishna conscious. So of those, the best are the devotees because they have no ulterior motive, only to serve Krishna. So there's the path of acquisition and elevation, trying to adjust oneself in the material world, even by following the Vedic path. And then there's the opposite, which is trying to give up everything, otherwise known as Jnanakanda. And neither of those leaves one in a situation where one can feel satisfaction in this world, and neither of those are considered to be auspicious. This is also mentioned in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam, first canto, still Narada Muni, where he says that naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam nashobade jnanam alam niranjanam kutak punas shashvara bhajram ishvare nacharpitam karma yadapyakarado. And this he says that actually, even if you're self-realized and you've given up the material world, if you haven't attained a chuta bhava, or an affection for Krishna, some feeling for achuta, for the personality of Godhead, he says, nashobate jnanam, it's not beautiful, it doesn't look good. Shobate means something beautiful, something nice. So he said, nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam. He said, it's not nice, even if you've renounced the material world. So what? It's not pleasant. He says, what to speak of those engaged in material activities to try to get something out of the material world? He says, that's always a bhadram. It's always inauspicious, no matter what you do in the material world. Nacharpitam karma yadapyakaranam. So he's saying again here that the only auspicious path is devotional service. And this is what Krishna is telling Arjuna also. Don't worry about the various paths in the material world where you try to conform to the various rules and regulations in order to elevate yourself to a higher position materially. Also, don't worry about renouncing the world, but take the path of devotional service, which is the path of selfless service or dedication. It means, as given to us through the parampara, through our acharyas, the six Goswamis, anasaktasyam vishayam yatarham upayunjita upayunjita nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchite prapanchikya budhya hari sambandhi vastina mumukshabi parityagyo vairagyam pavadu khatyate. Sorry, I chopped that up a little bit, but what it says is that the devotees use everything in Krishna's service in the path of dedication. They dedicate whatever they have, body, mind, and spirit and whatever possessions they have in the service of Krishna, the path of dedication. And by doing this, they actually truly renounce the world. This Krishna also mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmanahutam brahmaiva tena kantavya brahma karma samadhina. Whatever you use in the service of Bhagavan becomes transcendental. It's transcendentalized. And Prabhupada used to give the example of the iron rod. When you place it in fire, you leave it, it transforms. So anything that we have is transformed when we engage it in the service of Krishna, try to please Krishna by utilizing that thing. So that's the perfect path. And one shouldn't hesitate to give everything. And this I call the doctrine of preemptive giving. Would you like to hear my doctrine of preemptive giving? It's actually not my doctrine, it's Krishna's, but I like the phrase, preemptive giving. Once when I was in Vrindavan, I went to the Radhakund when I first got there. I stay in an ashram at Govardhan Hill, and we can walk around Govardhan, and we go to Radhakund, and we take a bath there. So I went there the first day. Now, I just want to give you a little background. In the ashram I stay, there's no charge, but I always give a donation. But I always give it at the end. At least I had. And this year I went and I took my bath. First day I was there. I took off my cloth, put on a gamsha, went into the water, said my Gayatri, came back out, all my stuff was gone. So that included money. Not all my money, but whatever I was carrying with me. It also included a pen, someone had just given me my pad, which had a lot of good ideas on it, and other things, but mostly my clothes. So I had to walk back in a gumsha to the ashram, which was about, you know, another 2 hours. So I just pretended that I was a sadhu. And when I got back to the ashram and I got back into my room, the first place I went to was to my locker, and I took out the donation that I was going to give at the end, but I gave it at the beginning. And why do you think I did that? I was acutely aware of the fact that if things are taken from you, you don't get any credit. But if you give them away purposefully to Krishna before they're taken, and will they be taken? Yes, they will. Everything will be. But if you give it away before it's taken away, then you get eternal credit. Durgatin tata gachati, Krishna says, you know. Don't worry if you give it all away and it hurts a little bit. You're going to get the eternal credit. And even if you try to keep it, you can't keep it, so don't be stupid. Because if somebody robs you, you don't get credit. If your family takes it because they need it more than you do, you don't get credit. I mean, maybe a little recognition, but it's not eternal credit. If the IRS takes it, you don't get credit. If the house burns down and your cash box goes up in flames, you don't get credit. If the moths eat it, you don't get credit. If robbers find it in your house, you don't get credit. There's so many ways you can not get credit, but there's one way that you can get credit, and that's by intentionally giving it to Krishna. So here Krishna's saying, don't worry, give it. Not just your money, but give everything. Give your intelligence. Give your energy. Dedicate your life to me. And don't worry, because it's going to be taken anyway, so you might as well use it for me. If you do that, you'll be happy. So the Krishna consciousness movement is universal. It's non-sectarian. It's based on this principle of preemptive giving. That look at your life. It's not really yours. This body isn't really yours. It doesn't belong to you. In fact, this question comes up in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The question may be asked, who does the body belong to? Does it belong to your parents? Really, they don't have that much to do with your body. It's material nature that creates it. They think, oh, this is my baby. And it's like, you didn't do much. And then, does it belong to the government? Like, if you live in some countries, they'll say, you know, you belong to us, you do what we say. Does it belong to the fire, says the Bhagavatam? Because fire ultimately consumes the body. Or if not, then it belongs to the worms who eat it. Is it theirs? It becomes worm food or jackal food. It's not grossing you out, is it? Okay. Well, that actually the body, the mind, the soul, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Manasa deho geho yo kichimur. Everything, whatever it is, my Lord, I give it to you. This is the only auspicious path. It's the only way to happiness. Savai pum sam paro dharmo yato bhaktira toksaji. Ahai tukiya pratiyata yayatma supersediti. Suja Goswami says early on in the Bhagavatam, if you want peace, if you want happiness, the only way is to dedicate everything, everything, fully to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It doesn't mean renunciation. It doesn't mean material enjoyment. It means dedication. Dedicate everything to the Supreme, then you'll be happy. Durgatim tachagachachi. Then, if you take that path, you'll never find yourself lost. Even if you don't make it in this life, he goes on to say in the next few verses, Krishna will reawaken your desire for devotional service. He'll introduce you to the path again through meeting of devotees, and you'll take up where you left up in the last life. So, now we can take some reflections or questions. Reflection means anything you heard that sounded useful or inspiring, and a question is something related to the topic, if you please. Go right ahead. Reflections are easy. It just means something you remember. Go ahead, Prabhu. Ay, 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 ay. Are you sure that's okay? That's going to be a little loud. Turn it down. No, no, no. It's online. They got it here. Can you turn it up, turn it back on, but turn the mic down. It's feeding back. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. So in the beginning of class, Prabhuji, you said there is no safe place in this material world, you know. There is no safe position in this material world. So I was thinking about, you know, means I see whenever you open CNN.com or something like that, you see, you know, aircraft flew into somebody's home or some motor car or somebody, you know, somebody's walking on the road and it's going on the, you know, people's, you know, car or going on the people. So means we really don't know, you know, what will happen at what time. You know, if we step out of the door, and anything can happen. So I really like the point, you know, that.
Yes, this is something. Now we lost this one. This is something that is mentioned by the demigods when they're praying the Lord Krishna in the womb. They say, Samashritaye parapalava plavam mahatparam punya yasho marare vavam buddhirvatsa param 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 yavipadam natesham. So this entire cosmic manifestation is Samashita, ye padapalava plavam. It's under the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and who's the killer of the Mura demon. So it indicates that he can do some heavy stuff. And he says, so take shelter of Krishna, who's the shelter of the entire cosmic manifestation, but don't take shelter in the material world. Because padam padam yad vipadam. Vipadam means missteps. So at every step you take, padam padam yad vipadam means that something bad's going to happen in the material world. You can guarantee it. There's going to be a misstep. And this is also mentioned by Shukadeva Goswami in the Bhagavatam when he says that deha patra kalatradeshu atmasainyesa satsapi tesham pramatadminhanam pashyanapi na pashyati. He tells us to Parikshit Maharaj early on. So don't take shelter of the material world, because he says, listen, your deha means the body. Deha apatra kalatradeshu, it means your family, your wife, all your siblings, everyone like that. They're all fallible soldiers. Because I'm thinking they'll protect me. But they can't protect you. So he says, don't take shelter in these temporary things. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj says the same thing in the seventh canto, ninth chapter of the Bhagavatam. Balasineha sharanam pitarao nishinha nartasya chagana buddhanvati najato nao taptasya tat prati. Prativedira yari hanja sheshtas, tava bibo, tanubutam, tarupekshitanam, Upekshitana means indifferent, upeksha. So if Krishna doesn't sanction it, then he says, you can't save a drowning man on the water even if you have a good boat. He says, even if you get the best medicine, it's not going to cure you. And he says, even if you're the best parents in the world, you can't save your children. Because it happens all the time. In fact, go to your doctor sometime and ask him or her if they can help you. And what will they say? No. They'll say no. First of all, I have no idea what you have, which is 90% of the time. Oh, should I not denigrate doctors very much? Doctors are good. We like doctors very much. And we go to doctors, we take advantage. We're not Luddites or anti-dentites either. But we believe in these things. But what Prahlad is saying, he's saying that they can't actually help you. In fact, in Ayurvedic medicine, there's a prayer you have to say when you take medicine. It said this won't work unless Vishnu authorizes it. And when you take Ayurvedic medicine, you have to say the prayer. Because it's coming from the Lord. So he gives this admonition, don't think that these things are going to protect you. So your point's well taken. It's something that Krishna tells Arjuna throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The material world is constantly moving. You can't depend upon it. And he says it again to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. He mentions, look around and take note through various means of observation. What is that? Shruti pratyakshamaityam anumanam chatushpadam. He says, look at Shruti, look at Smriti, look at Anuman, make your own deduction that nobody gets out of here alive. Even the strongest people. When Jack LaLanne died, that was it for me. You don't know who Jack LaLanne is, do you? He was the first one to introduce fitness in America, or even in the world for that matter. He went on TV and he showed people, look, you got to stand up, you got to move, you know, like one, two, three, four. He was the strongest guy in the world, healthiest, and he used to attach boats to his ankles and then he'd swim across the channels and defy all the odds, and then suddenly he just dropped dead. Pneumonia. Killed him in 3 days. It was like, all right, that's it, I'm out. Jack LaLanne dies, you know, it's all over. Anybody can die. So he says, look around and see how, for yourself, anumanam chatushpadam. He says, see that there's various kinds of evidence through shruti, pratyaksha, direct experience. And then he says, pramanishvanamastanyad, pramani, take this evidence. Vikalpatsa virajite. Virajite means become a little detached. What? From Vikalpat, he said, the material world is unstable. You're not in a stable place, not going to last. So don't take shelter here. So, good point. What else? Reflections or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
If I really understand what you just said,
so we are in great danger because we have been born, brought up that by the society to adopt to this material nature more and more. If you're not, then you will be getting criticized, like, okay, why you're not doing this, why you're not doing that. Like, same goes with their, like, children, like, say, woman. She gives one child, then people will say, hey, you need another child, otherwise they will be alone, like your child will be raised alone. So then she will need a second child. So like this goes on basically. So you're driven by the material nature. Unless you take a shelter of you come here and realize, oh no, no, no. We have to take control of the nature, not the nature should take control of your life.
Yeah, and actually the spirit of the verse I quoted from Prahlad Maharaj, Balasya Neham Shananam Pitaro, Prabhupada asked the question in the purport. So does that mean that you shouldn't try to save a man on water with your boat? Does that mean the parents shouldn't try to save their children? Does that mean don't take medicine when you get sick? He said, no, it doesn't mean that. He said you should take every ordinary means to try to deal with these situations, but you should understand that result is going to come from Krishna. And as far as realizing we're in danger, yes, but we can't become neurotic either, because if we suddenly then become fully aware of our precarious situation, then we won't be able to function very well. In fact, Krishna's very kind. He allows us to have a modicum of isolation from full exposure to how dangerous the material world is, so we can actually function. Furthermore, he allows us to forget our previous lives. Otherwise, we'd be very confused and also freaked out. Yes, Prabhu?
Bhagavatam, the verse akama sarvakamova moksha kamo darati tivrena bhakti yogena
yajeta parusham param.
Yajeta parusham param. So, what we heard from you is that we should completely surrender to Krishna. So, here it says akama sarvakamova. So, could you explain what Krishna is saying?
Yeah, he's saying whatever situation of life you're in, akama, if you have no desire, sarvakama, if you have all desires for material enjoyment, akama sarvakama va, moksha kama, you want liberation, udhara di, tivrena, he says whatever you want, whatever your particular desire is in life, you should approach Krishna. And if you approach Krishna, everything's available through Krishna. Now, why would the Bhagavatam say that? Well, there are various reasons. And this goes back to the purport also, and the way the Vedas deal with all living entities, because the Vedic project is huge. It's meant for everybody. So, not to take too wide a slice of this, but practically, if one does follow the Vedas, even the Karmakanda section, the idea is that one will begin to get faith in Scripture. Because if one follows the Karmakanda section of the Veda and sees what the result is, one says, oh, there's something in this. There's a higher authority. And that could lead progressively then to more and more understanding that there is a supreme controller and one can surrender. That's why the Vedas are a little progressive. After one's tried everything in the material world, one comes to the Upanishads, which are the first transcendental part of the Vedas, which are actually saying, hey, you want to know something more than the material world? There's a transcendental part to it, and you can observe it by looking at yourself, because you're different from matter and so forth. So there's a progression throughout the Vedas that's meant to lead us to from one thing to another. And if one approaches Krishna, of course, one doesn't have to go through all these various stages. If in any situation in life, one hears Sarvadharma Paritya as an example, and decides to take it and use one's free will, that, okay, I'll just surrender to Krishna, then you can bypass everything. Prabhupada gives an example. He says, if you're a poor person, you don't have any money. Anyone? Anyone? Okay, one person. Two. Always raise your hand when they say that, because that way they won't ask you for it, and then they may give you something. So, Prabhupada said, a poor man's there, and a rich man comes along with a huge bag of money, and he says, here, take it. No strings attached. So what's your choices? Take it or don't take it, right? But if you take it, then you become rich. So Prabhupada says that Krishna's offering, take this, and I'll just take care of all your affairs. So you can take it or not take it. Now, if someone has material desires, sarvakamo, and approaches Krishna, tivrena bhaktiyone, practices devotional service, what happens? So that's explained in the Shastra. What happens is that Krishna notices the part where you're trying to surrender to him, and he also notices that you have many material desires. Not just many, sarvakama, you have all material desires. So how does he do that? He's extremely expert. This is mentioned in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which says, satyam dishati satyatam artito nirnam nivartariyat artito yata. Swayam vidhate bhajatam anichatam ichapitanam vijapadapalavam. So he says, if someone approaches me in surrender, but they keep asking for material benedictions over and over again, says, I'll give it, but I give it in such a way that he won't want to ask for it anymore. And Giriraj Maharaj gives this example. He said, so when he was in Bombay, Giriraj Maharaj was the president of the Mumbai. And so there was a young man that was coming and helping Prabhupada translate his books into Marathi. And the young man had a father who had also come to see Prabhupada, come to see a holy man, and he had an addiction to smoking. And when he saw Prabhupada, he got really guilty about it. And so after a few times, and Prabhupada asked him, so how's your addiction? Did you give it up? Because the man said he wanted to give it up, and he said, no, I couldn't give it up. He said, I need your special mercy to give it up. Prabhupada said, yes, you can get special mercy. But that means that Krishna will make you so miserable that you'll be forced to give it up. So, would you like special mercy? Then, no. And so, Krishna knows exactly the desire of every living entity, precisely what the living entities desire. In fact, the Bhagavatam says, first canto, asau gunamayer bhavir, bhuta sukshmendriyatma bi, swad nirmiteshu nirvishto, bhunte bhuteshu tad gunan. At the beginning of every creation, the Lord manifests within the heart of every living entity and reminds him exactly what his previous desires were in the last kalpa. That's trillions of years, and then he's billions anyway, in suspension, in susupti, without any recognition of anything, no dreams or anything. But then he comes back out again. And then how does he get back engaged in the material nature? Krishna's there as the Paramatma, and he reminds him exactly, here's what you wanted to do in the material nature. So somehow or other, the person, that soul, comes in contact with devotees and shows some impetus, even the tiniest kind of impetus for devotional service, and Krishna takes note of that, and he helps that person to make advancement in devotional service. Hari, partly because he takes away those material desires. That's how kind he is, to help him take away those material desires. So if you have all desires, or you have no desires, whatever it is, you should come to Krishna, because ultimately he's the one who's fulfilling those anyway. And Krishna says that in the Gita. Remember, 7th canto, 7th chapter, he says, Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shari architum ichati tasya tasya chalam sharam tameva vididham yaham. He's saying that, people, they approach the demigods to get something. And this can apply to anything, any agent of the material nature. You say, this is what I want. And so you can get it. But who actually gives it, Krishna says? It's coming from me. He says, even the faith you have in the source that's delivering it, that's coming from me too. So why not just cut out the middleman and come to me? But then if you come to Krishna, he says, and Prabhupada translates, actually there's a Bengali verse that mirrors the verse I quoted from the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, that in Bengali says, this person has come to me, and now they're surrendering, and now they're asking all kinds of material things. Said, this person is a fool, Krishna says. But I am not a fool, Krishna said. He says, I know what's good for him. So he wants, I'm giving nectar, but he wants, now he's asking to drink poison. So what he says, that I'll give him his material desires, but I'll do it in such a way that he'll never want to ask for it again, and I'll replace that desire with desire just to serve my lotus feet. So that's how kind Krishna is. And everybody notes that, especially in the Bhagavatam, the story of Putana is the supreme example of this, because she comes to kill Krishna by smearing her breast with poison, and imitates one of Krishna's mothers to get in the room. And then Krishna kills her. And what's the end result? He accepts her in eternal lila in the spiritual world, because externally she showed herself as mother. So Prabhupada writes that he takes the least qualification of a living entity and discards anything else and simply takes that. So, any way that one approaches Krishna, and therefore in that verse that indicates this pastime, Uddhava, it's in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where he says, what is the verse?
Aho
bhakiyam stanakala kutam jighamsaya payat apyasad vi. He says that she came as with a dirty intention and disguised herself as a nurse. Kamvada yalum sharanam gatena. He says, but Krishna gave her the highest benediction. He says, who would surrender to anybody else? Kamvada yalum sharanam rajima. Who would surrender to anybody else except for Krishna who does this? Nobody else could do that. So merciful. So, akama sarvakama va moksha kama dadadi tivrina bhakti yogina yajeta purusham param. So one should focus on this. It's the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam. Don't try any other methods. Just surrender to Krishna in devotional service. Did that help? Okay. Another one?
In the last line of this text 14, chapter 6, one does good, my friend, is then overcome by evil. So in day-to-day our life, how to implement that? Right? One who does good. What is good?
Good is surrender to Krishna. In fact, this is mentioned at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. It says, second verse of the Bhagavatam starts, Dharma projita kaitavo tra paramonya matsaranam sadham. So the Bhagavatam comes out and says, look it, we're not going to cheat you. In fact, we don't allow cheaters in here. The only thing that works is surrender to Krishna. So this is what's auspicious. Everything else is substandard, according to the standard of the Bhagavatam. Surrendering to Krishna. So what does it mean for us? So when you say surrender, that doesn't mean that you know those high-speed chases you see on TV? Well, maybe you don't see TV. I don't know if there are TVs anymore. But in any case, there are these high-speed chases, and they're very fascinating for people to watch. In fact, the President of the United States could be giving a State of the Union, and if a high-speed chase comes on in Los Angeles, they'll cut away and go to the high-speed chase. There he's going down the freeway, and they can see him from the helicopter, and his mother's watching from, oh my God, that's Mikey. And then they pop the guy's tires, and he finally comes to a cul-de-sac. He jumps out. They got infrared cameras. They see him trying to jump over the fence. There's dogs after him going through the bushes. Finally comes to a brick wall. He can't go any farther. He falls on the ground like this, and he goes, I give up. So not surrender like that. But actually, voluntary surrender to Krishna is the auspicious path that one should take. And that is a sixfold path, sharanagati. It means accepting things that are favorable, rejecting things that are unfavorable, considering Krishna be one's maintainer, considering Krishna exclusively one's protector, always being humble, and also accepting that everything that I have belongs to Krishna. This is the sixfold path of surrender, sharanagati, taking shelter of Krishna. So that's what it means practically for us to implement that into our lives in whatever way we can. Those are the steps to surrender to Krishna. We probably just have a few minutes left. Yes? Oh, can she have the microphone? It's just coming. 7 seconds or less, or your money back from this meeting.
I was reminded of that pastime of Nidhi and Indra with the monks. Both of them had contradictory desires, but because they were engaged in serving the Lord, not only their desires were fulfilled, but also they were purified from those desires.
That's right. And Diti had gone to her husband saying that she wanted to have a son that would kill Indra. And he was a little taken back by this. But he conceived a way in which she could be pacified and the whole situation could be rectified. So this is exemplary because he told her how to perform a ceremony that was connected to devotional service. So Prabhupada points out in the chapter there that this is what happens when you approach, this goes back to Sarvakamavar, you approach with some kind of ulterior motive, but then you do the process of devotional service in trying to attain that. But in the meantime, you get purified. And she came to a different conclusion at the end, and there was happily ever after ending because of that. And it was because of the element of worshipping Vishnu in the sacrifice that she did. So that's pretty good. Durgatim Tata Gatshati. Yes, Prabhu. Oh, here comes the mic back from your illustrious wife to the other side of the room in 7 seconds or less.
Especially like the point that you said towards the end of the lecture that if you are, everything is taken away from you, you don't get any credit.
Yeah.
But if you voluntarily give it up in Krishna's service, you get all the credit. That's a wonderful point.
Yeah. It was Bali Maharaj's realization. Please, go ahead.
It's such a wonderful thing. I mean, that reminded me that verse from Bhagavatam which says, everyone is a condemned person in this world, is going to die. That means we are going to lose everything. So whatever we have, whatever little we have actually, we can try to offer to Krishna. And actually that also reminded me of that example of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur that he says the person is carrying that puffed rice and the wind is flowing, so it's just flowing away. So he says, no option, as a Govindam Samarvayati, I'm offering to Govindam.
Yeah, if you had offered it a second before that, then you would have got credit. And the verse, that point you made from the Bhagavatam about everyone's a condemned person, Krishna makes this point, 11th canto. He said, I can't imagine how anyone would try to enjoy the world, because he said, every living entity in the material world is living as if an animal ready to go into a slaughterhouse. Krishna says this. He says, so I can't understand why they think they can be happy in the material world. He's lamenting for everyone feeling like that. I know, Hare Krishna, right? That's a heavy verse.
You were saying that we are indebted because of karma, and Lord is a debt clearing agency. All we have to do is surrender and take it away.
Good. Exactly. That's a summary of the class, in a way.
And the other point was that yesterday...
Could somebody turn this down? I don't know the knobs.
Yesterday we had a home program and we were discussing the Shrama Eva
yes.
verse. And the purport there is very similar to the purport today, which is unless you can call it Swadharma, unless it's engaged in Krishna service, it's totally wasted stuff.
Mm.
And the converse is what we're talking today, where if you do even a little bit on spiritual stuff, that has higher results.
Yes. Bhagavatam is such a high standard. If we didn't have that, then this is one of the points that Narada Muni is saying. If you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. That's really what he's saying to Vyasadeva. He's saying, you've given all these, of course, gradual ways to become elevated. He said, but conditioned souls are so into the material world that they'll take it, that like, okay, this is good, I'm good here. So you really have to tell them, no, get out. I remember, this reminds me, once Prabhupada was flying in an airplane and somebody gave him some 7-Up, like the flight attendant or whatever, and he drank 7-Up. So, you know, everything got broadcast when his servants get off and say, like, what happened? You know, what is this, and that? And Prabhupada had 7-Up! And, you know, 2 days later, there were 7-Up trucks backing up to temples unloading. Not really, but, they were, you know, just spread like wildfire, and you think, like, why? It's like, there's so many other things you could have mentioned or taken advantage of. It's like, 7-Up! So it's kind of like that with Narada. He's saying to Vyasadeva, you know, why? If you mention 7-Up, they're going to keep drinking it and think that's the purpose of the Vedas. Just tell them to worship Krishna and, you know, forget this other stuff. That's kind of Narada Muni's mood. Just cut to the chase. And that's kind of how Prabhupada introduced the whole Krishna consciousness movement. One of the reasons that he wanted to have Krishna book, he was so insistent on having Krishna book because of this factor that unless people actually come to know that God has a form and how beautiful it is,
they don't have a chance of getting out of the material world. Yene ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayastabhava avashudhabhudaya aruya krishnena paramparam tata patantyato nadrita yushmarangraya. The demigods praying to Lord Krishna in the womb say, unless you get the beautiful lotus-eyed Lord and a relationship with him, then no matter what other thing you think you've gotten for safety in the material world won't last. That's the only thing that will help you. Now we've come to the end of the time. So this is a power center for Krishna consciousness. You've been given the perhaps the most lucrative spot for book distribution, for teaching Krishna consciousness to people here in America, anywhere in the world. And not only that, you can hold open assembly like we're doing here. You can't do this in China right now, and a lot of other countries. I went to Vietnam to get the Bhagavad Gita printed with the other trustees, and they warned us as soon as we got off the plane that you're being watched, and if you try to distribute any books in public, you're going to be arrested. And in China now, my friends go there to China to teach. The temples are all being closed. They can't hold temples open now. And it's dangerous to have even an assembly where you're talking about Krishna consciousness. You don't have that. You're still in a free country. At least last time I looked at the... it could change. If history shows this, the demigods thought everything was cool until Hiranyakashipu suddenly took over even the heavenly planets. And Prabhupada says, even in the heavenly planets there can be an upsurge of the lower modes of material nature, and what you think now is status quo can be totally turned on its head. So don't take it for granted. So I'm saying, take advantage now. Life is very short. You have this opportunity to work together. This is a really good team. You're in the top percentile of learning, intelligence, IQ, a material facility, and you have a free open space to teach Krishna consciousness to others. So work together and take advantage of this, make something of it, and you'll become famous, and you'll have what's called a spiritual portfolio. You need that. Spiritual portfolio means I sacrificed this and I sacrificed that, I did it. And I'll tell you what is the most onerous or difficult sacrifice that you can make. Shall I?
Yes, please.
Cooperation. And I've been making videos about it. I've been talking about it as ISV. One time I asked Radhanath Maharaj, I said, how did you create such a harmonious atmosphere in Chaupati? And he said, you really have to work at it, and you have to put the values that you really believe in the forefront. And you'll notice that his classes again and again emphasize humility and cooperation and so forth. So if you want in a community these values to take hold, you really have to present them again and again and again. And we've been talking about cooperation again and again, and it really is, Prabhupada says, synonymous with bhakti. We're all individual souls. We all have individual ideas about what to do. We have bias, even. That's what being individual means. You have a bias. But if you're able to suspend that bias enough, not completely, but enough so that you can work together with other people who have biases, for the sake of Krishna, for a higher cause of pushing on a mission of Krishna consciousness, then you'll attain eternal fame in the spiritual world, because it's just such a hard thing to do here. Everyone wants to fight against everyone else to attain their own ends and be known for the best person in the world. If you don't care who gets the credit for the organization you're working for having success, then you're really in a good situation. Even personally, you're in a good situation because you won't have any anxiety. If you can renounce the desire to have the credit for getting it done, you don't have to have your name on it. Not only will you be in a peaceful situation, but you'll also be unlimitedly powerful. No one can stop you from spreading Krishna consciousness. You'll be fully empowered to do that. So my prayer is on this night that may our team here in ISKCON Sacramento give full attention to cooperating, for the sake of spreading the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over Sacramento. Om Tat Sat. Thank you very much. Vanchakalpatin Rishcha Kripasanabe Vachapatitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Nantakoti Vaishnavindiki Jaya. Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Hey! Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman.